Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide.
Good job.
To take you deeper on your parenting. The date today is April the 24th, 2015. Our topic for today is Say This, Not That. That's right. We're going to talk about some things that you need to quit saying to your kids. Found a great article over at lifehacker.com by Shelley Phillips. Really looking forward to covering this one. This goes through a lot of the stuffs that we should be saying and should not be saying to our kids both. This is particularly good article that Jeff found because some of the comments at the end bring out some really great points that we've got to talk about in terms of, are we making powder puff kids whenever we're positive with them or not? Stay tuned for that here in just a little bit. Before we get into that, let's get some quick housekeeping out of the way. If you guys want to stay notified of the new episodes that come out here at the Real Family Guys podcast, just jump over to the sister station, the Family Podcast Network, at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com, and on the right hand side you'll see this little place where you can enter an email address and your name. Put that in there, click submit, ... boom. It really does say that on the button. Whenever you do that, you get put on a very special emailing list to make sure that you get notified of every new episode that comes out of the Real Family Guys podcast. Make sure you jump on over there, sign up to that. It is completely free to you guys. Never miss out on that one episode that, if you just could have heard Jeff and Trey this Friday, it might have changed everything about your week. Also, if you guys have any questions, comments, topics that you want to hear Jeff and I cover, or maybe just an article you thought we might like, hey, shoot it our way. We love that kind of stuff. We want to cover what you guys want to talk about. You can always email it over to us at treygibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com or jeff@texasfamilyinstitute.org. You can also go to the contact page of the Family Podcast Network. You can call us if you want to actually record your question directly to us, 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT and the number 0. You won't go straight to an automatic line, so don't worry about having all your stuff perfect and ready. You'll be able to record your voicemail right into Google, and it will send it into an email to us, and we'll put it on the show for you. Make sure that you leave your question first, and then give us your details last. All right, Jeffrey, what are we talking about today, man?
Well, you know, Trey, one of the things I run across in life is that you gotta be able to formulate what you're saying. You know, you gotta be able to be succinct, and you gotta know what you're saying. But I've run across a series of books. You may have seen them in the bookstore, or even on some bestseller lists. You know, because dieting's big fads, where we're told what to do. You know, eat this, not that, right? Yeah. And something this and not that, because they're trying to help us differentiate what seems to make sense versus what actually works, right? And so today, it's a podcast. The title of our podcast tonight is Say This, Not That. I have been in situations before where my parenting experience could be described as open mouth, insert foot. Have you ever felt that way?
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. No.
or even, you know, learning that crow actually, you better get used to the taste, because you're going to eat a lot of it as a parent. Because we do. We just end up saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. And our kids, you know, either don't respond very well, or, you know, we break their hearts or something. And,
or do exactly what we just did. That's my thing with my foot and mouth thing, is the minute that I wind up teaching them to do something, and they get so upset when they finally do it themselves.
It is amazing how much this parenting journey is a journey of growth for me as a parent, at least from my experience. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So we ran across this article of things to say to your kid, and the word that jumped out to me, and it wasn't actually used in here, but the one that I thought of as I was reading this is counterintuitive.
Okay.
All because right. When I say counterintuitive, there is a way that seems right, you know, a way that makes logical sense to me, and yet there's research that shows that it's the exact wrong thing to do, because the way that kids' brains work and developmentally where they're at is so far removed from where we're at as an adult. What makes sense to us as adult often just doesn't work with little kid brains. And I think that this article that I found here is it does a great job of demonstrating some of those things that we think that work well or that are going to help us, but in actuality, research shows that they have a very high potential sabotaging our efforts with our kids.
Well, you know, we come from a very what I'm going to call a high punishment mentality in modern parenting right now, and so we're very heavy emphasis on we've got our kid, and if they perform a behavior that we don't like, we make it uncomfortable for them so that way they don't want to choose to do certain behaviors all over again. And while that there's some part of that seems to make logical sense, the reality is that it rarely ever brings about the results in kids that we're looking for. And actually what we're beginning to find is, especially is that as relationships with kids, and Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, you do a heck of a lot more work with families than I do now. But what it seems as though in terms of between kids and parents, there's kind of a relationship attrition that's beginning to happen. And I'm speaking in terms of generalities here, but as at least nationwide in the United States, it just seems as though relationships are beginning to degrade and are beginning to attrit a little bit as they're going further along. So we don't have these well-established deep relationships with each other. And when you come in with this with the punishment mindset, and you don't have really solid relationship with your kids, what happens is it produces the opposite results. It actually tends to generate more of those things that we don't want in our kid because now they're at least getting attention from it. And so feel good because we're getting noticed. We may not like how we're getting noticed, but let me tell you, I don't know if you ever watched, there was a Twilight Zone I watched with my wife years ago. She loves that show. And it was actually psychologically very fascinating because what would happen was this was supposed to be years and years ahead in the future. They had completely abolished the penal system. There was no prisons at all. But what they would do is if you messed up societally, then they would put something on you that would indicate you as being one of the people that are quote unquote imprisoned, and nobody was allowed to acknowledge that you exist. And it drove people mad, literally mad, because they acted like they weren't there, and it would drive people crazy. And so, you know, I got to thinking about there's an application for that in parenting, is that a lot of times when we take this approach with kids and they don't get noticed for anything but whenever they screw up, is that they actually begin craving any kind of attention that they can get. And so that goes against a lot of what we're going to talk about today, which is kind of the opposite. Well, if we're not supposed to focus as much, now you're going to hear us say a lot today, we're not saying that you don't acknowledge bad behaviors. Yes, you absolutely have to as well. However, we're going to talk about the alternative today, and what is that?
Exactly. I think that's a good analogy. We tend to get more of what we pay attention to when we're only paying attention to that that negative behavior.
Right.
We're inadvertently teaching our kids to do more of it. And that's what was really fascinating about this article as I was looking through it, that there are so many things that go against conventional wisdom, right? We have grown up not just in that punishment mindset, but we've also kind of grown up in an era. Trey, correct me if you have a different opinion on this, but we've grown up in an era where we've been told that we need to praise our kids, but we haven't really been given the how to and why it's important.
Yes.
In the right circumstances. And so we've done this blanket, all we have to do is praise them and tell them how good they are. And we started to get some pushback from that as we learned that that the everybody gets a trophy kind of mentality doesn't really help our kids thrive.
That's right.
It ends up creating kids that are complacent, that aren't willing to try hard because they haven't experienced not the displeasure of failing, but the joy of triumphing after failing. You know, and they haven't learned that for themselves because they haven't had to. Right?
That's right. That's excellent point, Jeff.
So here, as we're looking at this list, let me go ahead and give a shout out for those who want to look it up later in case they aren't in front of their computers. This, you're going to find this at lifehacker.com. It is, you'll have to Google it because it's a really long one, but it's 10 things to stop saying to your kids and what to say, right? So basically, it's just like we said in the title, say this, not that. So they go through and Shelley Phillips has kind of aggregated a bunch of suggestions for us, but not just what not to say, also what to say, right? And I got to say, the reason that this kind of jumped out at me is because I have had some experiences in working with families where the parents have their hearts in the right place, but what I found is that we end up a lot of times telling our kids what not to do. And when I draw this on a board, I kind of draw like a Venn diagram, right? And in one circle, I say, this is the set of things we tell our kids not to do. And then I draw a huge circle next to it that doesn't intersect. And I say, and this is everything else that they can do. And when you tell your kid not to do something, what you're doing is this, there's this one tiny little thing that they embed in their head. Like if I say, stop hitting your brother, right? And then I turn around and I say, what did I just tell you? And you say, I wasn't hitting him. I was, and then whatever else. I was hugging him with my fist, or I was licking him. Well, quit licking your brother. And next thing you know, they're like sniffing him. Well, quit sniffing your brother. And pretty soon I figured out that there are an infinite number of things that they can learn or they can figure out to do with their brother. And if I try to tell them what not to do every single one, I'm going to exhaust myself.
Yeah, that's good.
Instead, I need to be telling them what to do. And I try to explain this to parents and say, this is something that we need to be doing as parents, is teaching our kids what to do. And that will necessarily, if they're doing what we tell them to do, they will not be doing what they shouldn't. You know, it precludes the behavior that we don't want. So let's take this from a different approach. So looking at this article, 10 things to stop saying to our kids, these are things that we need to curb, but we need to replace them with something else. We don't just need to tell them stop doing this or whatever. We need to do things differently. And ironically, this is not stuff that we need to stop telling our kids to do. This article is full of suggestions on parents being told, stop doing this or stop saying this and instead say that.
Yeah.
All right. So the first one on our list, as we're kind of getting into this article here, is the phrase, good job.
Yeah.
So you don't want to drop the good job bomb on our kids. And once again, this seems kind of counterintuitive, right? Don't we want to tell our kids that and praise them for when they do well, right? That makes sense. The problem is that this becomes kind of a blanket statement. Good job, good job, good job. And they hear it so often that we tend to use it as a blanket thing to when kids don't really do a good job on something, but we still tell them good job is what the article is trying to get at here. And so what it does is it inadvertently teaches children that anything is a good job when mom and dad say so, right? And that's just not the truth. And it will not serve them well if they grow up thinking, oh, look, this macaroni necklace I made is the most beautiful necklace in the world. You know, my dad said good job on this. Or, you know, oh, look, I swept everything into the middle of the floor. My dad said good job. I'm done. No, that's not going to cut it in the real world, you know.
You know, they actually released an article a few years ago. We featured it on FPN a while back. And I say that this been a couple of years ago, but it was a beautiful, and I'll be willing to bet this is where they actually got the research from this. But what they were comparing was do we want to focus our emphasis on how much effort that our kids are putting into doing something or focusing on the end goal? And what they found is that when we approach it when we focus on the end job, so, hey, you did a good job, rather than focusing on how hard of a time they put into it, what they found is that kids would begin to grow up, and they actually used the words like, you're so smart. Should we ever tell our kids, oh, you're smart? And what they found is that when kids were focused on end jobs and then told that they were smart, kids actually began to believe that they were smart by a default, that they were just smart. So they actually put less time and less effort, and they pushed themselves significantly less, believing themselves to have already attained that level of smartness, so they didn't have to work any harder. However, when they told kids, wow, you really worked hard on that. I'm impressed with how much effort you put into that. I am surprised that you know, at how detailed your research into that you did was, right? When they focused on the things that the kids did, they performed better, they worked harder, they did more, and their grades were significantly better, because for them, the achievement of the end job was not the totality of it. It was how hard did they push their mental muscle, their brains, while they were working to get to the end result. And so I think this one's a beautiful thing. Should we stop saying good job with our kids? I absolutely endorse that. I say good job as a habit. And I believe a fairly bad habit that we use right now, because I'm de-emphasizing how much we need to be focusing on what they did to get there and the growth process, rather than just, oh, look, you did something, and you know, because you did something, then you get a good job for it. This is good.
It really is. The suggestion that she makes instead of telling them good job is to focus, like you said, Trey, on the effort. I'm gonna come back. There's another point further down where we talk about calling our kids smart or telling them how smart they are. And I want to reference the same research that you're talking about right now, but at a different spot. So telling them good job focuses on the result, but at this stage in development, the results, it's never going to be as good a job as you could do yourself or as an older kid could do or something like that. And instead of focusing on the outcome developmentally at this age, they need to be learning that if we continue to try, then we're going to learn. If we continue to put effort in, then the effort is going to be something that will be its own reward. So does that make sense? Am I saying that okay?
Absolutely.
All right.
I didn't mean to jump ahead. Sorry, I went so far ahead.
No, it's all right because this all ties together. I mean, this is all kind of the same foundational point. It's just kind of taken a bunch of different ways in how we phrase things. So we need to focus on effort is one of the points they're making here because it teaches kids to be more persistent when they're attempting a difficult task. And quite honestly, I've seen a number of successful people when they talk about how are they successful. It's not because they're the smartest. It's not because they are the cleverest or they can get to the result quickest necessarily. It's because they're the ones that plug away until they make it happen, right? Yeah. And it's that hard work that gets them there, not necessarily their cleverness.
One other thing I want to add to this as well, a kid believing that they did a good job on something is not a problem. One of the other reasons why we kind of reject this mentality, at least in the homestead day, Gibson, is that we don't want our kids looking to us as parents for their self-esteem, right? We've got this mentality, especially right now, amongst the folks, the touchy-feely side of all of this, like I operate on, is that we are the ones that are responsible for building our kids up and making them feel like they did a good job. When what you really want your kids doing is learning to be able to look back on their work and decide, did I do a good job on this? And we want our kids being able to self-evaluate because we don't want them becoming dependent on other people's approval of themselves or the jobs that they do. Because the reality is, if you're not careful, you wind up getting yourself paired off with somebody at work, maybe somebody that you marry, maybe you got a family member, a brother, a sister, a mom, or a dad who, no matter how hard you freaking work, you do not get their approval. Well, what does that do to their self-esteem if it's linked to what other people think about them? We need our kids to be able to stop and look at this. What that can look like is if a kid comes... This happens to me regularly. Every Sunday we get done, and the wonderful, absolutely wonderful people at our church always load our kids up on papers that they draw on, right? Because they're just at that young age. And so they come out and they always ask me, they say, "Dad, how does this look?" And what they're looking for me to say is, "Oh, that looks so good. You did so good with that, blah, 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 blah." And I did it again, didn't I, Jeff? But what we do when we see that is we say, "What do you think that looks like?" So.
Well, you know, you mentioned the Nurturing Parent curriculum that you and I both looked at, and is an excellent place that you and I have kind of learned some of our parenting stuff. Mm-hmm. And the next point that they make on the list, rather than it's kind of a corollary point, but instead of saying good job, we need to be able to praise their effort. Hey, you really tried hard on that. All right, I could tell that was something that was a challenge for you. And you really handled that well. And then we have this next phrase that they put on here, which is telling our kids, "Hey, good boy," or "Hey, good girl," or "Hey." We usually link it with something that they're doing as well. For instance, most parents say this because we're trying to boost our kids' self-esteem. We're letting them know that we think that they're good. Unfortunately, the way kids' brains process that is a little bit different because they tie things together. So the Nurturing Parent curriculum makes a big difference, differentiating the type of praise that we give our kids for doing something. That's the good job, or hey, good boy, good girl, for doing that. And then there's type of praise that we give just for being. So praise for doing and praise for being. And what happens a lot of times, the praise for being is stuff just like I tell my daughter, "You know what? I really enjoy hanging out with you." "Why?" "Just because you're you." Or, "Hey, you know, I love you." "Well, why?" "Well, because you're my daughter, because you're my son." That you don't have to do anything in order to get that praise. That's praise for being, just because of who you are and because of our relationship. But inadvertently, sometimes we link that together. Like when my son takes out the trash, I'll say, "You know what? I'm really proud of you when you take out the trash. Thank you." And then, you know, "Well, wait a minute, Dad. What about when I don't take out the trash?" You know, once again, as an adult, we can separate between those two things, but sometimes kids' brains just kind of mush all that together, and the resulting thought that they come up with is, "Well, what about when I don't do this thing? What about when I don't take out the trash? Are you still proud of me?" And so it sets up our kids to assume that they're only good because they've done what we've asked, And so they don't want to lose the status of being a good kid, and their motivation to cooperate becomes all about receiving that positive feedback, and they can be really clingy, and it can damage their sense of, well, I know I'm good because my self-esteem is good, right? So instead of telling our kids, you know, good boy or good girl for what they're doing and trying to affect their self-esteem that way, we can be a little bit more specific about it and say, you know, if my son's taking out the trash, you know, I really appreciate when you do your chores, right? When everybody does a part around the house, it makes the entire house easier to live in, right? And so it gives them real information about the behavior that they're doing and how it impacts your experience, right? Or, you know, I saw you help your sister with her homework, and I really appreciate that. That was great of you to go over and do that. And when we just observe something that we see them doing and we comment on it rather than assigning it a value that is good or bad, it allows them to figure out for themselves whether they like that feeling of the affirmation they're giving, that you're giving them when they do something. And so then they do that thing again because they're developing internal motivation. Instead of doing it just to please you, they're doing it because they feel good about themselves.
Yeah. You know, there's a couple of things that get linked together in this. We completely reject the good boy / good girl in our family. I mean, neither Corey nor myself use it, and we had to actively remove it from our language those first few years once kids began to understand it. But we removed it because if you're not really careful, and I'm not sure it's possible to extricate these in a kid's mind, but if you're not careful, when you're linking this idea of, oh, you're a good boy, you're being a good girl, you're beginning to link this idea of what goodness is to obedience. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, it's so dangerous, because the converse to that implies that if you're not obedient, then you're not good. A good kid, right? You're not good. And a kid, this sounds crazy. I know that's completely illogical. It's a logical fallacy in and of itself. And as an adult, we can look at that and see that's not even what we meant. But kids will absolutely do that. If you're a good kid and if you're being obedient and you're a good kid, but if you're not being obedient, then you're being a bad kid. Well, a kid who makes a dumb decision, does that necessarily make them a bad person? Well, no, they made a mistake. Maybe they didn't know. Maybe they never tried it before. Maybe there's other emotional crap going on that's fueling their desire to do this. It's not just a random, ooh, I feel like being evil. Sometimes there's other factors that are going on, and they're not bad kids when they choose these things. They're making bad choices, right? But we have to be able to separate those out. And when we run around saying things like, well, you're a good boy, you're a good girl, it really teaches our kids that you're only a good person in my eyes, and you can only ever be a good person in my eyes if you do what I want.
I think the more that we understand how our kids' brains are working at different stages of development, the better job we can do as parents to respond appropriately to what their needs are. And I think that this next point that they list here is a good example of that. The phrase that they want us to avoid as parents is when our kids are doing something artistic, because, you know, we all have those pictures that they bring home from school where their hand's a turkey or they've you know, turned something into a heart and had a poem for mom, or even if they've just learned how to use crayons and all they've got on the page is a scribble, right? And they show it to us wanting our praise, and we look at it and we say, what a beautiful picture. Right. Well, what we don't realize is, even though we're trying to be nice to them because that's the polite thing to do, what we've inadvertently done is we have taken an evaluation or our judgment and we put it onto our kids' artwork.
That's good.
And quite honestly, it teaches them to rely on somebody else to judge the yes. worth of something they've done. Right. So instead of just arbitrarily saying, what a beautiful picture, even if it's, I mean, it might look like a Jackson Pollock Picasso on steroids with Van Gogh, and we're still sitting here saying, well, what a beautiful picture, when it's just a mess, right? Instead, we should observe things about it, like, oh, I see red and blue and yellow. Can you tell me about your picture? And by making that observation, instead of putting a judgment on it, what we're doing is we allow our kid to decide for themselves what they like about the picture and then share it with us. I mean, because as often as I'm sitting here saying, wow, that's a pretty picture, you know, it could just as easily have my kid turn around and say, oh, it's supposed to be scary. That was a monster. And suddenly I'm like, oh, well, they just called my bluff because I don't really know what I'm saying. I'm not really giving the merit to what they're doing. I'm just trying to placate them, you know? And so by asking them to tell them about it, not only are we investing in our relationship with them, but we're also inviting our kids to give us their own evaluation and being able to hear what their creativity has behind it. And it's really a great conversation starter with kids if you're willing to listen to the 30 minutes of their explanation of why they drew it, to ask them what they meant it to be before giving an evaluation of it.
You know, I think that's really good. The approach you take on it is my absolute favorite. And we've got to get our kids to a point to where they're able to assign the value that they find in things themselves, whether it's clothing or whether it's their pictures. One of the other things that I've noticed with this is when we're constantly talking about how they did such a good job, like we mentioned earlier, we're talking about, oh man, that's a beautiful picture. Oh yeah, I love your picture. Yeah, dude. Because that's what we get. They come out of those Sunday school rooms and they said, oh dad, do you like it? Do you see my picture? Do you like it? That's what they want to know. And so I always start the question off with, it doesn't matter. What do you like it, baby girl? Do you like it, my son? Yeah, I like it. That's all that matters right there. But, you know, one of the things about that is that when we're constantly giving our thumbs up and saying that we like it, I think in a lot of ways it devalues some of the compliments that we ascribe to our kids. I mean, how many times have we, you know, after a time that we finally compliment our kids on something of doing things this way, we compliment our kids and they look at us and say, oh, of course you're going to say that. You're my dad, right? And because we spend so much time saying we like it, because we're just trying to make them feel good, then we lose some of that value. I am very honest with my wife. When she comes in and says, does this make me look fill in the blank? Does this make me look fat? Does this make me look like I, does this not look good? I'm very upfront about that. Yeah, no, that does not look good because of this. But she knows when she walks in, and I mean, my jaw hits the floor, and I'm like, so do we have enough time? Right. You know, when I get to that point, she knows, yeah, she knows it's authentic.
The question, does this look sexy on me, is always yes.
And so, but kids can be the same way. And when they're constantly hearing, oh yes, I love it. Oh, it's so beautiful. You did such a good job. Oh, that's amazing. Right. It can devalue that. And I can see it in my eyes when I say compliments to my kids. And like, you know, when my oldest daughter has a phenomenal sense of abstract. I can't even begin to explain how she looks at things before she draws them. And then she draws them out and she has perspective. At 8 years old, she understands perspective. And it's a beautiful, amazing thing. It's something very innate in her brain. And I love it. So when I make those compliments to my kids, I think it adds more weight to it because they know, oh wow, dad's complimenting this. Now, I'm not saying that you be one of those guys that's hard to please. I want to make sure I'm very careful. And some of the dads out there, I know especially, because we dads can be bad about this, just took this as their moment to go, oh, all right, I've been doing this right the whole time. Don't give them a compliment until it's flipping Picasso. That's not what we're saying either here. We're talking about emphasizing when they do it well. However, if you look at the picture and you don't like it or you have no flipping idea what it is perfectly fine to pick out something you do like about it. That doesn't mean that you're saying this is the best piece of art that you've ever seen. Oh, it's so beautiful. But maybe you love the fact that they picked, you know, maybe you don't even like the colors personally. You can always say things like, I'm really impressed. You picked out your favorite colors. That's really good, right? There's always things that we can look for to emphasize in there without it having to be this, oh my God, you're Rembrandt.
That's right. That's right. So, quite on the opposite of affirming our kids and giving them that kind of false view of themselves, that the first couple of suggestions, you know, where we don't tell them good job, don't tell them good boy, good girl, or don't say what a beautiful picture. Now we get to some of the things that we do hear parents telling their kids all the time, which is the whole threatening thing. Stop it right now or else. Right? Yeah. Now I got to tell you, Trey, this is probably among my top 10 parenting pet peeves.
No.
Is the idea of threatening our kids. And it is almost never a good idea because you lose either way. Either you're throwing something down in the middle of an intense moment where you're likely to be overreacting anyhow because you're frustrated, right? That's usually when this comes out.
Right.
So either you're throwing something down that if you follow through on it might get you called on CPS or or you have to back down. Which teaches your kid that you're not going to follow through with it anyhow. Either way, you lose. And so helping parents understand that threatening as a tactic is a losing position for you as a parent sets them up to say, okay, well, Jeff, if I can't say this, what should I do instead, right? It is a really difficult thing to learn how to do, because it requires the alternative requires us as parents to not dominate our kids, to be able to step back, yeah, a little bit and be a little bit vulnerable. And that's a hard thing, because we have this mentality: I'm the parent, I'm right, I know what's best, we've got to do it my way. And we don't like that backing down piece. And so we oftentimes see the alternative threatening as something where we're the loser. But this is one of those counterintuitive things. By expressing something that shares some sort of vulnerability with us, and then redirecting them something different, it allows us to de-escalate things. Threatening almost kind of invites our kids to bow up against us, right? Because that's that, right. Or else, it's like, or else what? What are you going to do, right? And in this day or age, it's a losing proposition. So instead of saying stop it right now or else, the article suggests, now I got to step away here, because I actually don't like the advice, or at least the example that they use here, because the example here in the article says that the phrase is, it's not okay to hit your brother. I'm worried that he'll get hurt, or he'll retaliate and hurt you. But if you'd like something to hit, you can hit a pillow, a couch, or the bed. Okay. So this is an example that I would take a different approach to. I'm not saying it's a bad example. It's not what I would choose to use with my kids, because they do what they say. They say don't threaten. Instead, share some vulnerability and then redirect them. So that's what they did. I'm worried that you'll get hurt. So there, you're showing your worry. I just don't like the advice they give when they redirect them, because I don't think that that cathartic kind of punching or hitting or you know, that actually is the good way to get rid of that emotional energy. I think there are better ways to do it. So maybe in the store, instead of telling them stop it right now, you can step back and say, okay, well, what do they really need right now? Are they bored? Right? Are they asking yourself, what is it that I can redirect them to? And then filling that need for them. So if you're at the store and they're having a fit, instead of stop it right now or else I'm going to take you out in the parking lot, and I'm going to give you something to cry about. You know, that's not, yeah, something that you want to follow up on any sense of it. So what could you say instead? Okay, well, my kids are bored. So what if we play a game in the store? Or what if I ask for their help? Or what if I say, let's get what we absolutely need to get, because my kid's cranky and what they need is a nap. I'm going to get the two or three items that I have to have right now. And even though it's an inconvenience, I'll come back to the store later, right? That's a much better relational thing overall. In the moment, it may not feel like the best option, because it means more of an inconvenience for you. But guess what? That's parenting.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we have to be inconvenienced. So if you feel the urge to threaten, or if this is something that might be your go-to strategy, I strongly urge you to consider what it really does for your relationship with your child, and then say, okay, what could I do instead? And start developing alternatives. Instead of threatening, I can offer this alternative. I can look for the best needs of my kid. I can look what do I need right now, and take a deep breath or try a different approach. So what suggestions do you have instead of threatening? How do you handle things on your end, Trey?
Well, you know, conceptually, to answer that question, you know, I think we have to kind of evaluate, because I think a lot of folks look at this and they ask themselves, and I'm saying this because that's what we did. We have to ask ourselves, what's wrong with threatening our child? I mean, if they're doing something that they know is against the rules and I'm making a threat about them not breaking the rules, what's wrong with that? I think is the question that comes up. So let's break that down kind of philosophically here and look what's happening. So if a kid's going up to his brother and he's getting ready to swing at his brother, right? What is, in most cases, the use of physical aggressive force that's not defensive? So whenever it's aggressive physical force against somebody in an offensive stance, what is the purpose of it? In most cases, in some way, it's about trying to take control over someone else. Maybe they have something that they want, and so they're trying to sock it to him to get him back. Maybe one of them is being loud and not stopping talking, so they're about to pop him, so they'll make them shut up, right? In all ways, it's about trying to convince that other person that I can control you through physical force, right? It is about a threat. So then we come in and we see a kid about to break said rule, whatever it is that we have in our household, and we walk in and say, if you do not stop that, then I am going to fill in the blank with whatever punishment or threat that we're about to add. If you follow the same, I'm not saying you even have to agree with me on this, but if you follow my logical trail here, what in sense are you doing over your kid? You're trying to take power over them. Trying to take control over them. So at the fundamental level, why do we say threatening is not a good idea? because it is teaching kids to do the very thing, maybe not the exact same thing. I'm not saying you're walking up to your kid and you're socking them just like they are, but conceptually it's the same thing. I'm going to use my position. I'm going to use my power physically. I'm going to use my position as a mom or a dad to convince you that I have control over you, to get you to stop doing those things. So it's not influential. We talk a lot, Jeff and I talk a lot about positional versus persuasive leadership. The positional power is that person who comes and says, I'm mom, I'm dad, you're going to do what I say, when I say to do it, because I'm mom or dad, or because I'm more powerful than you, or because I pay your bills, right? That's one we love to do. I pay the bills in this house, which is true. But when we're trying to use that as a way to say, so you have to obey me now, that works for some kids, but many of them it doesn't. Versus
those kids that it works for, it ends up, you do it at the cost of your relationship.
That's really good. We contrast that with persuasive leadership that says that's the place where we earn their respect, we earn their trust, we earn their ability to look to us and want to be like us, and then they want to follow us. We don't have to order them. We don't have to threaten them. We don't have to stick a gun to their back. We go run into that hail of bullets while we're fighting, and they're going to follow us because they trust us so daggone much. And that's what we're talking about, this difference here between why is threatening not okay? Because it is about doing typically the very thing that we are trying to tell them to stop doing.
And, you know, Trey, one of the reasons this one was kind of difficult for me to conceptualize is by either good fortune or dumb luck, we managed to not fall into the threatening standpoint. And the truth of the matter is, I don't have to threaten my kids. This is not something I struggle with. Love because we don't use that positional thing, you know, that we were just talking about. It's more that persuasive, explaining why things are important and demonstrating to our kids that we want them to learn to trust their own judgment. And I actually think that the last line of this suggestion paragraph here, if you're looking at on the website, if you go here and are kind of following along with this, Shelley says, by offering an alternative that's safer yet still allows the child to express their feelings, you're validating their emotions, even as you set a clear boundary. And the last sentence is key. She says, this will ultimately lead to better self-control and emotional well-being for your child. And I think that's exactly the point that you and I are making here, is that we don't want our children to grow up learning that they have to be dad-controlled or mom-controlled. We want them to learn how to be self-controlled, and threatening doesn't help them learn that.
Brilliantly put. I can actually speak to this in a quick personal story. We had an issue with my son, Grant, and we have this giant candy bowl in it, and it's kind of like the bank whenever they can earn, you know, earn basically money that they can transfer in and then get candy. And we've been noticing stuff had been coming up missing, and there were wrappers laying around that we hadn't authorized, but we just kind of thought, maybe it was Charlotte getting into something or something like that. And I finally walked into the kitchen one day to my son standing up on our butcher block, and he was reaching in there, and both of his pockets were lined and they were completely full. And I mean, I went right to the threatenings. If you do that, blah, blah, blah. And I was just, you know, then I'm going to do this to you, and you're going to lose all that for the rest of your friggin' life, and you're never going to see light and day ever again. You know, I ran right down those threats, and you know what happened? He got sneakier. He got better at it. That's all that happened. He got sneakier about when he would do it, because then he was waiting until he would listen to see when I was going to go do certain things. And we finally got him to talk to us about it, and he knew when I was going to be outside longer and how much time he had. I mean, the dude was starting to become one of Ocean's 11's crew, you know? And I'm like, oh, crap, what have I done? So I finally just sat down with him, and I actually got choked up. I'm talking tears in my eyes. I say, son, it scares me whenever you sit down and you're stealing, and I began to lay out some experiences that I had had with it and the consequences that stealing things it had for me, and I laid all of that out there, and I said, and it scares me, my son. And you know what? He hasn't done it again since I did that. Now, not all stories turn out amazing like that, and I've had things where I've done that with my kid. That first conversation that we had, they went right back to doing the same old things again, and it took a few times of reinforcing it, but I chose not to issue the threat. And here's the thing, they began to self-govern themselves. That was a great point about that last sentence. Ultimately, it leads to better self-control and emotional well-being, because we want our kids being able to discipline themselves. So that way, whenever the all-seeing mommy and daddy eye isn't around, they're still not doing it.
All right. So one of the other tactics that that frequently comes up in the parenting arsenal is to bribe our kids, you know, and we have that conditional statement. If you this, then I'll give you blank. Right. And I see this a lot at the grocery store, you know, grocery store, especially if you got more than one kiddo. If you're there by yourself and you've got more than one kiddo, you're not playing man to man. You're playing zone. Right. you're already outgunned and overpowered. And so you're making deals. You're wheeling and dealing because you know that when you get to the into the checkout line, you're going to be you know, pinned in on either side by what they call impulse purchases, and the kids are going to grab things, and you're going to. So by going into the store knowing that that you've already got you know, that you're going to capitulate at the end and give them something. Well, hey, let's leverage this into into just bribing them outright, and say I will buy you a pack of gum. I will buy you the candy of your choice. So this is something that, quite honestly, I don't think it's necessarily a terrible thing. But the point that they make here in the article, and that they've made in several of the others, I don't know if we hit it very hard. It's not that you do these things with your kids or that I do these things with my kids. It's the frequency with which we do them, right? Doing these things occasionally, telling them to stop that in a moment of frustration or bribing them or even saying good job or good boy – that is not going to immediately invalidate your parenting experience and make sure that your kid turns out to be a serial killer. What we're talking about is when this is our only tool, and when we do it frequently enough that it kind of becomes that slippery slope, right? It's going to come back and bite you because eventually your kid's going to figure out that if you're willing to pay, that you're willing to pay every time. And pretty soon they have your number and they're using it to position themselves so that they get something for doing everything, every chore, every nice thing turns into, oh, I've got to be paid for it instead. So the suggestion that that Shelley makes here in this article is to offer genuine gratitude. You know, instead of bribing them for something, when they do something, give them gratitude. Thank you so much for helping. Tell why it means something to you. Man, because you empty the dishwasher, it means it only took me a few minutes to get the dishes done. And now, you know, we can play a game of chess, or we can take a walk together, or, you know, tell them why it matters. And if there's not something that your child has done very recently, because if you've already fallen into this kind of bribery thing, it may have been a while that they did something of their own accord, right? So you can always go back and bring up stuff they've done in the past, you know, even if it's been months ago. You remember, you know, last fall when you helped me rake up the leaves? I'm just thinking about that. That was a really big help. Thank you, right? Over time, it helps your child to come to the conclusion that helping out is both fun and intrinsically rewarding, because ultimately what our kids want from us is affirmation from us and our attention and our time. And so by giving them that appropriately, then it offsets what we try to do with bribing.
You know, in our household, we call this mercenary angels, right? These are angels for hire, you know. So if you know, you can get great behaviors from us as kids, right, at a price. And I'm with Jeff on this. I almost called you Grant, Jeff, but I'm with Jeff on this one too. I don't find this one to be an inherently bad thing. Personally, I believe that most of us do things because we're looking for the value that we get out of it, right? And so I have no problems with paying kids for behaviors. Problematically, what creates mercenary angels are these kids that find that the only value that I get in doing the right thing is what I get paid tangibly out of it. And I think it is incumbent upon us to teach kids that benevolence in our actions is a beautiful thing, because it just feels good and it helps other people feel good. And sometimes we even conceptualize it with our kids as, hey, listen, your sister wants to play with that toy that you haven't been playing with. Now it's yours and we'll never force you to do that. But if you tell her no, that she can't play with it, what do you think she's going to do next time whenever you want to play with her toy? She's probably going to say, I can't. Say, hey, I'm not making you do anything. I'm not saying that you have to give him that toy. I just want you to think about that. So far, we've got about a 9.5 out of 10, you know, chance that our kids are going to go ahead and let him do it. But, you know, this when it comes to these mercenary angels, you know, we never want to pay per behavior. You know, so we don't want our kids getting a piece of candy every single time they do that. How we will do this, how we use that in our house, is that we occasionally reinforce excellent behavior. Not just right behaviors, not just good behaviors, not just doing the right thing, but we look for things that are excellent behaviors. So we'll watch, and sometimes one of the other kids will be feeling bad, and like Anna will step in and say, I tell you what, I'll do your chores for you and I'll finish those up, right? She's not thinking we're listening. She's not thinking we're paying attention. We will often reinforce that kind of stuff. If Grant just hops up and goes and grabs Axel and starts, you know, giving him his pacifier or something like that, you know, we look for those things like that, especially, we especially reinforce it when they weren't looking for anything at all. And we love to reinforce when kids do things just because. I was just doing it. We've even had instances, and I'm telling you guys, you say, does this work? We've actually gotten to that point that with Anna, our about to be 9-year-old, that she will come up and she will do something, and we say, you know what, I really appreciate that. We're going to hook you up with something. And she will be like, no, Dad, I don't want anything. I did that just because. No, no, kiddo, we love this so much. We're actually going to do that for you. And
you
she will look at us.
This reward.
I've had my daughter look at me. This is no joke. And I actually get a little choked up when I think about it. But I've had her look in my eyes and say, then I refuse. I did it for you. And walk off. And I'm just like, I just got kicked in the face. That's amazing. Because my kid is even acknowledging that this is about doing. I don't even think she felt super ooey gooey inside. She did it solely because she knows mommy and daddy appreciated it. And when you work on this, I'm telling you, we're starting to see the fruits of that with that bigger kid of ours.
I think that's a fantastic story. I got kind of ooey and gooey just hearing you say it. So,
you almost made Earl Grey come out my nose.
All right, so I mentioned earlier that I was going to bring that research up again, and so here we are at this
point. I got ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that just shows how brilliant you are because you
agree whatever. Didn't read the article carefully enough is what that really means.
All right, so ironically, saying you're so smart is the next no-no on here. And this goes back to, like we were saying earlier, with the good job and praising our kids for doing. The research that Trey was talking about earlier, it was actually a really fascinating study because what they did is they took groups of kids and either praised them for their smarts or they praised them for their efforts. And what they found is that when we tell our kids so smart, what we think we're doing, once again, this is based on that logical, it makes sense to me, we think we're helping to boost their self-confidence. But when we give them that uncategorized, you're so smart, or look how smart you are, you're the cleverest kid, or something like that, what we unintentionally do is we're sending the message that they're only smart when whatever the goal was that they accomplished, whenever they're showing that thing to us that makes us say, oh, look, you're so smart, you're so clever, that's when they're smart. And so that's a lot of pressure for them to live up to. And what happens is over and over when we tell them they're smart after they've completed a puzzle or taken a test, that although that makes them feel good, it also gives them a sense of complacency because they know that they'll get praised for this level. But if it's something that's outside their comfort zone, something they haven't tried before, it puts the pressure on them. If I can't live up to that level, what if I'm not smart enough on that one? And so they don't try. And over time, they're worried because if they don't do so well on this thing that might be a little bit harder for them, that we're not going to think they're smart anymore, and that becomes unbearable for them. And so they stagnate where they're at, and they don't progress. And so what they found in the study was the kids who were told, hey, you did really good on that test, or hey, you're so smart, you're the smartest kids, being told that they're smart made them less likely to try the ones that they didn't feel smart on, so they didn't prove that they weren't smart. And the group where they told, you know what, you tried really hard on that, I appreciate the effort, or it's important that I saw the effort you put in that and that you tried, that's amazing. Because they knew that trying would get them the effort, they'd try, and often they'd surprise themselves because they'd try and they'd be able to do it. And so they'd try again, and look, I can do this. Or if they failed, they'd keep at least trying, and they'd learn something from it, and so they'd get better and better. And so those that praise the effort learn that effort eventually, generally, will lead to results. And that's something developmentally that our kids really need to hear when they're young enough at home where they're still accepting of our influence. And so telling kids that we appreciate their effort and focusing on that effort rather than results lets them know that, yeah, solving the puzzle is fun, but, you know, attempting something that's even more difficult can be fun too. And so it sets our kids up for success later on if we're helping them to understand that effort is a key component to success.
Well, one of the things to remember, especially with our kids, and we really want to impart our kids with this, is the notion that smarts, intelligence, is not fixed. It's not it's not that you know, the maximum amount of whatever you can learn is out there. That it's more about how much we can accumulate. And so it's kind of this mentality that our brain is a muscle. Fascinating. It actually wasn't a research article, but it was a literature review. I believe it was in Detroit. There was a particular school in Detroit that was having the, we're talking, they were like third from the lowest testing stuff in the nation. Like, we're talking like they were the third from the lowest in the entire United States. And they brought in specialists to teach testing and exam skills, studying skills. I mean, they just brought in people after people and nothing was happening. They actually got the state to lower their score requirements some to see if that would help boost their ability to believe they could do it. That had no effect on it. Finally, there was this one particular guy who asked to come into the school, and he said, just give me 2 weeks. And he walked in with that school, and in 2 weeks, they went from the third lowest to the second highest in their district.
Wow.
In just 2 weeks, you know what the one thing he taught them?
Try.
He taught them that their brains were like a muscle. And you gotta grow it, and you gotta keep growing it. If you want to get smarter, then you gotta work your muscle. You gotta work the brain. And when he taught them that, they began to understand my capacity for being an intelligent person is based only on how much I can stretch it and work it and grow and practice.
But it's not a fixed point where I've measured my intelligence, and that's what it is.
That's right. And so what they actually found was those kids were able to move on and get higher IQs and intelligent quotients on a lot of the major intelligence tests, like made by Wechsler. They were able to go further than some of these other kids in these big daddy schools that had straight A's, solidly because these kids, again, like we talked about, like I got way ahead of ourselves earlier, these kids actually got to that point where they began to see themselves, well, I'm already intelligent, so I already know I am, my grades prove it, and so they didn't push themselves. But these kids that had learned, I'm a smart kid because of how hard I worked to grow my knowledge, my understanding, my wisdom, etc. They pushed themselves. It was a phenomenal lit review. But we need to impart that to our kids. Your smarts are not fixed. And I want you guys to hear me as parents, not just in your parenting, right? You are not a fixed asset. You can grow yourself. You can do amazing things. Jeff and I both run websites. And you know how much we knew about it right before we got started running these? Zero. Nothing. We knew nothing, but we pushed ourselves. That is what we need to impart to our kids. If you want to know about fill in the blank, then you just got to go get it.
That's right. Go figure it out and go learn. And that's where that effort comes in, and the willingness to, there's an old Zen saying that said that the beginning of knowledge is knowing that you know nothing, right? And so it, being willing to say, hey, this is something I can learn, and believing in your capacity, I think, is an important facet. Okay, running through the last couple that we have here, because I think that being the big talkers that we are, we've only made it through six so far, so we're just a little bit more than halfway, but we're almost out of time. So one thing that they suggest not saying with our kids, say something different. We need to tell our kids, don't cry. Now, this one resonates with me because I think, once again, this is one of those developmental differences where we assume, because we're adults and we have the capacity to have a better handle on our emotions, that our kids are at that same level of they can control their emotions as well, right? And so we might have a little bit of compassion for our kids, but honestly, I suspect that with most common reasons that our kids are crying, our capacity to be empathetic lasts less than a minute. Seriously, I mean, if you sat down and listened, it would be, hurt. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I know that hurt. Yeah, okay, listen, I've got
to get over it.
I've kissed it. Okay, all right. Hey, you need to put your big boy pants on. Quit crying now. Right? You know, and it evaporates, right? And so,
and ask me how I know.
I've done it. So I want to first acknowledge that watching our kids cry is probably one of the more difficult things that a parent can do, because it creates what I call parental anxiety. We want to fix it. Our concept of ourselves as parents is the ability to comfort, take care of, and protect our kids, right? But when we say things like don't cry, what we're doing is we're invalidating their feelings, and we're telling them that tears, that there's something wrong with crying, right? And so it can cause kids to learn to stuff their emotions, which has other consequences down the road, right? So we used to have a rule in our family that there are three reasons that you can be crying, right? And so instead of just telling my kid not to cry, I'd make sure that it was a legit reason, right? So I'd come over and I'd say, hey, listen, you're crying, and I got to know why. Are you, the three reasons were if you're lost, if you're hurt, or if you're scared, right? And my reasoning on this and what I told my kids was, if you're lost, I want you to make the biggest stink ruckus possible, right? Because I want somebody to say, where's this kid's parent? And I want them to find me and reunite us, right? So if you are lost, I told my kids, cry all you want. If you're hurt, now this is just kind of a no-brainer. If something's hurt, I think everybody has a right to cry. I'm not going to tell somebody they can't cry if they're hurting. And the last one was, if you're scared, sometimes we're just overwhelmed, that fear comes out and we're just scared and we cry, right? And so those were the three valid reasons. Are you lost? Are you hurt? Are you scared? And if the answer to any of those or to all three of those was no, well, okay, well, let's talk about what's going on, right? And then it was just an opportunity for us to help them verbalize their emotions so that they can understand the feeling they're having, and we can encourage some of that emotional expression, because that ultimately teaches them that it's okay to have emotions, but we have to deal with them, right? So I tell my kids, it's okay to cry. Crying is even cathartic, right? Sometimes you need to cry. And I'm here to listen to you. And after we've cried for a while, then okay, now we need to do something else. But that time frame is usually longer than a minute for me anyhow. So
yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. I do agree with this one. I also have to add, this is probably one of the ones that I'm the worst at. We don't say the phrase "don't cry," but we use the phrase "it's time to wrap it up," which is the equivalent of "don't cry." So I mean, this one really does. This one speaks to me. As a quick segue for this, for those of you guys who have little babies, and I know Jeff will endorse this as well. For those who have little bitty babies, like infants, little bitty babies don't cry to manipulate. They cry because they have a need, and it's the only way that they come out pre-programmed to express said needs and desires. And so if you have a little baby that is crying, it with most all of this audience, it bears without having to say it, but we do want to make sure that we say it. Little babies don't cry for any other reason other than need. It's not until they get much older, we're talking much older, to where they get to that point to where they manipulate. Oh, well, Trey, you don't know my toddler. My toddler tries to manipulate through crying. That may be, I don't know if I would interpret it as manipulation in a lot of cases with a lot of kids. It's just the habit that they've had for up to this long. It's how they've gotten everything when something was uncomfortable, when their stomach was growling, or whenever they were wet or dirty or whatever else. Everything came out that way. And so sometimes it takes all of us a while to unlearn some bad habits, especially if our communication skills haven't been built up incredibly well, which a lot of young kids aren't.
Right.
They really don't know any other way. And so it's like, my options are cry and do the thing that I've always done before, or I have no other way to tell you that, listen, I'm hungry. And so it backs kids into a corner that can be unfair when we're sitting there saying, hey, kid, wrap it up. Don't cry.
Well, that's something to look out for, because like we said, crying is that natural expression depending on what age they're at. So once again, knowing where our kids are at developmentally empowers us as parents to be able to respond better to them. And if they're still 10 years old and they're crying and getting a fit every time they want their way, well, yeah, we might need to look into the manipulation angle.
Right.
Sure. Right. Okay. So the last couple ones, let's see. Telling our kids, I promise, and then whatever you're promising. I've learned a long time ago that one of the developmental things about kids is they have a hard time at especially at younger ages with abstract reasoning. And a lot of times we understand a promise is a conditional thing. And unfortunately, our young kids, once they understand what a promise is, dictionary definition, they see it as black and white. And they don't understand that if we promised to take them to the fair and a tornado came up, well, that's our problem. Why didn't we take them to the fair?
Yeah, right.
You know, they don't understand that there are some things that outweigh the condition that we set up. You know, I promised that we're going to go to a movie to celebrate your grades, but then daddy lost his job and we can't afford it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's an easy thing to do because as adults, once again, we understand the conditional nature of promises, but little kids don't. And so we need to understand that broken promises hurt, especially to kids that developmentally don't understand them. And so it would be better for us and for our kids to To be more explicit about that conditionality. So in the article, Shelley tells us to be super honest with our kids, right? And what we're basically saying the same thing. Her example is, I know you really want to have a play date with your friend this weekend, and we'll do our best to make that happen. But remember, sometimes unexpected things come up. I can't guarantee it'll happen, but I'll do my best. Right. Now, the flip side of that is we also have to follow through. We have to make sure that we actually are doing our best and we're not just lying to our kids, because otherwise we're going to erode the trust that we have with them. So if you do break your word, the advice that she gives, and I agree, is that you need to own it. You need to acknowledge it and apologize, because sometimes even parents fail. And if we demonstrate, okay, yeah, I told you we tried to do this and then I didn't even try, and that's my fault. Because I've disappointed you. You know, to be honest with them and show them that that if we've broken our word, that, you know, that's life. It happens sometimes. And we need to be able to own it and move on with it. Not only is it good for us to demonstrate it, but it's also it's good for us to kind of set the expectation for our kids that that it's going to happen in life. And if we let it devastate us, then that's just... We're setting them up for a lot of heartache in life if they view every promise as something that is going to come true, or else the world's going to end, right? So being a little bit flexible and making sure that we're honest with our kids and helping them understand that a promise is something that is a rarity. Most of the time we're going to give them hey, I'm going to try my best, and then we're going to follow through by actually trying our best. We'll get a lot further and we'll break fewer hearts with our kids.
Jeff, I'm going to say we got time for one more. Do you have a favorite out of these last two?
Yeah, I think the last one is probably the best one.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. The phrase to avoid, Shelley says, is do not ask your kid, why did you do that? And honestly, this is something that springs naturally from my lips when some inexplainable behavior is coming up. If it's something that I don't like or I don't have tolerance for, or, you know, we just don't have time for, It stretches the bounds of my reasoning, and sometimes I will just look at my kid with this look on my face that says, you're a complete idiot. My mouth doesn't say that, but the look says that. And then the words that come out are, why did you do that? Right? Yeah. Well, in the heat of the moment, when you ask your kid why, usually what you're doing is you're pushing them into a defensive stance, and what happens is they shut down and get defensive, and they may not even have a coherent reason. They may not have a good reason why, and to come up with something is an impossibility. It's not going to happen, right? And so instead of asking our kids, why did you do that, which is usually a rhetorical question because we're not really asking why, we're just venting our frustration. Instead of doing that, we need to open lines of communication, maybe by guessing what they're feeling, what their underlying need might have been, right? Why, instead of, why did you do that? Like, wow, were you feeling frustrated right now because you didn't feel listened to or something like that? If you set up an attempt to understand what your kid was feeling, one, it's going to diminish your own emotional level, right? It'll take you back down to where you're not as outraged, but it's also, it creates a little bit of room for your child to respond instead of getting defensive. And so avoiding pushing them in that corner with, why did you do that? Asking them instead how they're feeling, or understanding that they might've had a need that they were trying to have. Like you were saying earlier, it was an opportunity for them to communicate something with their behavior. Well, let's try and figure out what they were trying to communicate with their behavior instead of assuming that they were being disrespectful or assuming that they were being hurtful, right? So there's probably more discussion on that, but I know that we're bumping up against time. So once again, Life Hacker, you have hacked my brain. These are some fantastic suggestions for things that we need to avoid saying with our kids. So instead of saying this, say that instead. I think Shelley's got some good suggestions on here, and I encourage everybody to check out this Life Hacker article that you'll find in our show notes. And there may be some other things that you've run across that that you've said and they backfired on you, so you learned a lesson. Or maybe you have fallen victim to that old curse. Well, when I'm a parent, I'm never going to say that to my kid. And then you're repeating the same thing that your parents said to you, and you learned something from it, and you want to share that with us. We'd love to hear those stories. Make sure you get in contact with us and leave us a message, shoot us a note, or send us an email, and we'd be happy to review those, share them on the air if they're appropriate, and if not, if there's a question there, we can maybe answer that question. So thanks for listening today. Trey, you have anything to wrap us up?
That's gonna do it right there.
All right, life hacked, mission accomplished, say this, not that, and have a great week.
We'll see you all next week.